morning, everybody.
The name's on the screen.
And I work in strategic policy at the Office of Finance and Services. Other people that are in my same team are Dawn Routledge and Kate Harrington. So if you haven't seen me around the traps, you might have seen them speaking at some of these events as well. Our team's responsible for the data and information aspects of the ICT strategy. So that means that we work very closely with state records and also with the IPC. So that's why I'm here speaking to you today. It's not just about technology. As we know, data and information are pretty critical pieces for the transition of government. So I know some of you already know a lot about the ICT strategy, if you've heard me speaking before, but others might not be quite as familiar with what it is. You may not have ever heard of it, or you may just have heard of it and not really know too much about what's in it. And also, it's been a while since I have spoken to the RM Forum, so I just thought I'd start out with a bit of a recap on the background of the strategy, so what it is and how it works, and then go through and just talk about a little bit about the digital plan, which is just the update to the ICT strategy for 2014-15, some of the progress that we've made and a couple of new actions that might be a bit more interesting to records and information managers. And then I'll talk a little bit about the Accelerating Digital Government Task Force and how that also relates to the ICT strategy. I'm conscious that I'm the only thing standing between you and morning tea, and probably our tracking is a little bit behind because we always get lots of interesting questions. So I'll sort of try to whiz through and just touch on things at a bit of a superficial level so that we might have time at the end for a bit more question and discussion. If you've got any burning questions as we go through, something that I can answer fairly quickly, I think it's good to just put your hand up and we can have that question and answer along the way. If you think it's something that's a bit more discursive and might lead to a lot of debate and interest, then maybe we can leave it to the end, or indeed morning tea if you want to talk a bit more. Does that sound okay? Because I'll probably ask you a few questions along the way as well, so it's only really fair to give you a chance. So just briefly, this is the front cover of the hard copy of the ICT strategy, because even though it's about technology, of course we love our hard copy still. It was requested by government in 2011 and then it was first launched in 2012. And it really aimed to take a completely new sort of approach to ICT planning and management. And there are two key areas that make it different in its approach. The first is the area of governance, and the way that works is that it's overseen by the ICT board, which consists of secretaries from all the clusters across government. So you've got a lot of high-powered senior leadership involved there. And then the ICT board is advised by an advisory panel, which consists of representatives from industry and the research sector. And they're also advised by the ICT leadership group, which consists of CIOs and senior business representatives as well. So again, they just come from across government, so we get lots of different agency perspectives, but again, a lot of sort of senior level buy-in and interest. And the leadership group is then supported by a whole range of different working groups that look at specific issues and challenges. They might help to develop different policies and standards. And again, those people come from all across government and they can be practitioners in lots of different areas. So I know that a lot of people here have involved in different types of working groups. Can I get a show of hands, maybe anyone who is involved in any of the working groups or communities of practice, communities of expertise? Yeah, so it's a good chunk, maybe a quarter at least are involved in and have had something to do with things that are incorporated into the ICT strategy ideas that have been developed. So that's the first area of difference, is really that approach to governance, which, as I said, it brings in a lot of senior level interest and buy-in. This is not something that's just happening behind the scenes and then we're trying to get senior support all the time. And it's also a very collaborative approach across government and then also with sectors outside of government. So then the second area where the ICT strategy in its new version aimed to be different was more than just a sort of technology upgrade and refresh strategy. It's not just about, when do we get new computers and how often should we upgrade from Lotus Notes to something a bit more, significant. It takes a really holistic approach, not just the T but also the I. So it includes a lot of data and information management aspects within the strategy. And the objective is, as you can see, on the far side of the screen there. The whole objective is a very outcomes-based one. So it's saying that information and technology are really driving towards supporting better services, better government services, and better value public investment. That's what we're trying to achieve. We do that across five different capability areas. So that's the arrows that are running horizontal, services anywhere, anytime, community and industry collaboration, citizen-focused services, better information sharing, that's a key one for all of us, and then financial and performance management, which also has a strong information component to it as well. So they're the capabilities that we need to build to be able to deliver better services and better value. And we do that across seven areas of what we call priority initiatives. And those are the vertical columns. I'm not sure how well you can read them. I'll just read out what the different columns are, but then I'll touch on each one individually as I go through. So the first one there on the left is Service New South Wales, that's in the purple. And then in the darker purple, there's Open Government. And then Open Data, Infrastructure and Managed Services is another priority initiative, and also procurement reform. And then there's information management and information sharing. So they're drawn out here in separate boxes because there's a lot of work under each of those streams, but they're in the same colour because they comprise the same priority initiative. And then the last one there is skills and innovation, skills and capability. So the update then brings in, it's really trying to stress the collaboration that the strategy is driving towards. So the strategy gets updated every year. We just report on the key actions that we've achieved, the progress that we're making, and then we set new actions to keep moving forward each year. So it's not a completely new and different strategy each time. But this year in particular, we just wanted to highlight really the collaborative approach, which is just one of the things that's so different beyond just the technology. So it's really showing how we're working with the community, industry, and across the public sector towards delivering the better services and better value. I think it's really focusing more on those people aspects of change than just looking for technology solutions. And again, it's something that makes this ICT strategy quite different from those in the past or those you might have seen in other sectors. So I'll just talk through each of those initiatives one by one, and I'll explain a little bit about what each one involves for those who are not as familiar with the strategy, and then a little bit about what's happened in each and one or two interesting new actions that we're looking forward to. Excuse me. So the first is Service New South Wales. Has everybody heard of Service New South Wales? Yeah, lots of nods of heads. I know that not everyone has, and we were recently invited to speak at another forum, which was indeed a government forum, and asked if it would be interesting if we spoke about Service New South Wales, and the person organising said, so we said, okay, we better talk about that one. What it is, for those who may not know and just don't want to say, it's a one-stop shop for government services. That's the short story. And the idea is to make it easier for customers to interact with New South Wales government by bringing those services together in one place. So what do we mean by one place? Well, one telephone number that you can call where the person can deal with your inquiry wherever it needs to go, that person has the information on hand to help you. And one website where you can go to do all your transactions in one place. And then at the moment there are up to 26 integrated shop fronts. Again, that you can go into that one place and you can do all your transactions there. That's the objective, that you don't have to visit, you know, one agency to get this license and another agency to renew something else, and somewhere else you make an application, that you can do it all in one place. That's the objective. And the stage that they're at now, they have over 800 services that they provide, and those services come from at least 15 different agencies, and that's just going to grow and increase. It's going to be the new way that we operate. So I guess I have two questions for you. Who has been involved in transferring services to Service New South Wales? Many? Any? Don't know? Don't want to say? Where are those 15 agencies? Or have you just not been involved? That might be the other question. Yeah? Yeah. Well, I think that's part of raising the awareness and profile of what is happening in Service New South Wales, because records and information managers really need to be involved in this transition, because it means looking at the information flows and what are the records being captured of those transactions and who should be managing them and how, and who needs to access them and how. So, yeah, questions?
What are some of those bigger agencies in that 15?
Sorry?
What are some of the bigger agencies in that 15?
Well, the biggest agency is Roads and Maritime. Yeah, so lots of the transactions that go through with driver's licensing and so forth. But then there's a whole range. You can see the in the red there it says pay and renew, apply, order and book, change and check. So they're the kinds of services that are going through. Anything where you can make an application online or, you know, all kinds, a whole raft of different licenses, fishing, you know, boating, etc. And then if you want to book certain kinds of appointments and so forth, maybe with driver's licences, for example, if you have to make an appointment to do an eye test or things like that, you can do that online as well. So I don't have a list, I'm afraid, all 15, but the main one was the Roads and Maritime, and that gave a sort of depth of services from one agency. And then all the services that used to be delivered through the GLS, that gave a spread of different agencies also being brought in. So, but that's the way we'll be moving going forward, is the transactional types of services that can just be done in a very consistent and repeatable sort of way will be delivered through those one-stop shops. But then that should free up resources for some of those more personalised and human-based services that take more resource and can't just be automated. So going forward in the new year, the main action there for Service New South Wales is that they're aiming to ramp up and expand their digital channels. So they've had a lot of publicity around one-stop shop fronts and people coming in, but they're starting to try to move more people to using the online channels. And one of those, just last week, they had a pop-up digital store that was in North Sydney. So it's a temporary store. They have lots of tablet computers there for staff, just basically walking people through the use of those online services, so that hopefully those people will then understand how it works, and afterwards they'll do it on their phone, do it at home, do it at work in their spare time, etc., and sort of use the digital channels a bit more. Of course, the other reason why I say it's such an important role for records and information managers is because behind the scenes there's all this information in agency silos, and it's really about trying to bring those together and get an aggregated view of the customer's transactions. So at the moment it's a bit like spaghetti behind the scenes, and although you've got a one-stop shop and you've got one person there dealing with your inquiry, behind the scenes they're logging into 150,000 different systems and trying to manage all of that in separate ways. So we need to help to try and bring those things together and operate as a more, in a more seamless way across government. So the next one of those pillars is open government. Second initiative, and that's really looking to take an open online approach with the principles of transparency, participation and collaboration. I think everyone in this room is probably fairly familiar with open government, and we've just had a wonderful talk about GIPA, which is one of the pillars of that. One of the key drivers in the open government space is of course the Open Gov website that State Records manages for government publications, so lots of you will be familiar with that. And they've also produced the social media policy and resources to help agencies understand how they can better use social media for conducting government business. So there's a range of tools available there. Coming in the new year, one of the interesting priorities they're looking at is publishing the parliamentary Hansard as an XML feed. Why do you think that would be interesting or useful? Sorry? In real time? You can. I mean, it's basically, it makes it consumable by other services. You could set up alerts for particular topics that come up. You can also bring it together with other forms of data and analyse it. So rather than just, static PDFs, which all you can do is sort of download them and read them, by having an XML feed, it becomes something that you can use, something that you can bring together and combine with other things. So it's a really different format, and it brings a lot more potential use to the data that's contained within the Hansard discussion, which brings me nearly to the next pillar, which is open data. So releasing the Hansard, the Hansard's already in the open space, but by releasing it as XML, then it ticks a lot of boxes in the open data list of stars. The main purpose of open data is to support open government, but it's also about stimulating innovation, different ways of service, different sorts of solutions, because especially from industry and the research sector, they can find all different kinds of ways of using that data for different purposes, for public value, that we may not even think of, or we may not have the resources to do. So the more data that we can release in usable kinds of formats, the more different solutions and different types of value can be derived from it. So the open data policy was released in late 2013, and that requires agencies to prioritise high value data sets for release. There's a definition of high value, but it's really around the sorts of things that, you know, that the public would find interesting and that could be of great interest. And then just to publish those data sets on Data New South Wales. Now, Data New South Wales has recently transferred from Finance and Services over to State Records, and it's aimed that in the future it will sort of link up with OpenGov, because obviously they're doing the same thing, so they just have slightly different formats of content. So by linking those up and having open data and open publications all available in one place, that'll make it a lot easier for people to find and use and search. And then when you release the data, there's a licensing framework that's called OSGOL or Creative Commons, and by applying the appropriate license, the main default one is just an open license that says you can, we call it CC BY, and it's an attribution, so people can use the data as long as they say, I got this data from New South Wales Government. But there are also other more restrictive licenses which apply in certain cases. If the data has been created, say in collaboration with an industry partner, there may be some copyright or other, you know, types of commercial interests in the data that mean it can't just be reused without fee being paid or some other requirements being met. So there's a range of licenses that you can choose from and apply to the data, so the data can still be released even if it's got some restrictions that apply. So to help agencies sort of working with that, one of the new tasks for the year is developing a model copyright statement around open data that agencies can just reuse for, you know, for most of the things that they would release. And then moving on from that, it's not all just about boring old policy and stuff like that. The other part of open data is a lot of fun stuff, where we get to do things and, you know, put our data out there and then see it turned into things that can be creative and interesting. So who's heard of the Apps for New South Wales program? A few people? A few people never heard of it before? No? One of the things, the way that Apps for New South Wales works is that OFS goes out to different agencies to talk to them about open data and about what might be high value data sets, for example, helps them identify data that could be publicly released and work through making it available. But then agencies have an opportunity to raise either challenges that they want to solve, it could be issues around the data that they want to work through, things they wish that they could do that they don't have the resources for, or just ideas for stuff they think the public might be interested in. And then we call for proposals from developers to use this data to develop different types of apps to address those challenges. And it's a competition, and there are prizes for the winners that include things like assistance maybe in commercialising their products, or you know, some cash prizes, not a lot. And obviously there's a lot of benefits in it for government, because we learn about how our data can be reused, how it can be valuable when we release it, how we can make it available, and you know, and then it's just building connections with the community, with the capability and the development space. So the latest round of challenges of open data, and the data and the challenges come from education, from State Records, and also from Family and Community Services Young Carers Group. So they've made data available and then they've raised some challenges that they want solved. If you go to the website, I've put the link up there, you can see the videos from each of those three agencies where they describe what their challenge is and what their data is that they've made available. And so we've received lots of applications for those and they're being shortlisted now, and the 9th of December there'll be a pitching and judging event where we get to hear what kind of things people have come up with. So just as a really brief kind of example, the picture that's on the screen there comes from a much earlier round of open data, and it was an app that was created by a developer called Beacon Maker, and what they've done is they've taken artworks from 19th century artists Harriet and Helena Scott, and then they've linked those to the Atlas of Living Australia, which is the database of current insect populations. So you get on this app a combination of these beautiful images that are very detailed with, you know, you can see the legs there of the insects and, you know, they're absolutely fantastic artistic images. But then it connects to a lot of the data about, you know, the scientific data about the insect population. So it brings together two really quite different and unique types of data sets into something that's extra usable. So I won't talk too much about the fourth and fifth initiatives, infrastructure and managed services and also procurement, but that's really looking at things like, say, how we make it easier for government to procure ICT as a service rather than having everything in-house. So one of the key things that we're involved in is making sure that, say, in any model contract, that information, records and data requirements are incorporated into those contracts, so that agencies don't have to think about it every time, asking those questions about, you know, where are your servers located to meet data sovereignty requirements and so forth. So we've developed a lot of models and templates that you can just step through to ask the relevant questions about privacy, about how the provider is going to manage, protect access and also maintain accessibility. And think about how you might manage disposal in those kind of environments as well. The group that works in that space puts out a lot of technical standards, so we work together with them to make sure that they're aligned with information and record standards. Last year, the year before, they put out the cloud services policy, so that's come up for review. So you can keep your eyes open for that. The reviewed cloud policy will be coming out very soon. And one of the new pieces of work underway is an enterprise architecture framework for use across government. So that's working to try to bring some more standardisation to the way that we manage our ICT, as well as business and information processes within that. And then the one that's probably of most interest to us, the sixth initiative, is managing information for best services. The key things that come into play in that space is the information management framework, which many of you have heard me speak about a lot, ad nauseum. There's also the digital information security policy, and I think many of you have been involved in things to do with especially classification and labelling, and really helping agencies improve their information security practices. There's a data custodianship policy which helps to assign roles and responsibilities to agencies for managing their data and information, and then lots of work in the spatial space as well. So a location intelligence strategy and the foundation spatial data framework, just as examples. And then a lot of the work to date in the information sharing pillar has been around developing resources to support more information sharing between agencies. So things like a template for a memorandum of understanding so that agencies can assign and agree responsibilities around data management. But what they're looking towards in the next year is some really more practical implementations around sharing, like developing APIs to support data extraction from one system to share with another, and also piloting some sharing models between non-government organisations and agencies to really work through what some of the issues are there as we move towards these different and distributed models of service delivery. You know, what are the information management aspects that need to be considered So there's a lot of work going on in that space. I want to talk just a little bit about the information management framework, just for those who may not have heard of it. As I said, I'm just going to really touch on these things because we're short on time. But the framework is based on 7 principles, which say that, you know, to realise its value, data and information have to be managed strategically. So everything that falls within the information management framework is going towards addressing one of these principles to show then how data and information supports better services, supports better value investment when it's properly managed. So the 7 principles just follow pretty much the information life cycle. You know, that information should be governed as an asset according to its value, collected and managed in line with quality standards so that it's fit for purpose, organised for easy retrieval, and also organised for efficient management. There's 2 different reasons that we organise information. That information and data will be secured to protect its integrity, which makes it better to use, and also with respect for its sensitivity, which goes on to support the principle of sharing. And then there's also we will use information for evidence-based policy, targeted service delivery and performance management, and then reuse it to get maximum return on investment. Because there's no point in having all this information and protecting it and keeping it beautiful if we just don't actually use it. And that's a really key change for us going forward, is really starting to use and reuse our data and information more often, more effectively, and to share it around so it can be used in different ways by different groups of people. Not just to have it, but to really use it to do and see things. That also covers the sharing, I think, that we'll share it to help with streamlined service delivery and reporting, and then we'll maintain it as long as it has value. So of course that means, you know, maintaining it for a long time, if that's how it's needed, and then disposing of it systematically and accountably when it doesn't, when it's no longer needed. That's what the framework looks like in all its glory. For those of you that have seen it before, I think and I hope you'll see there's a lot more black boxes on there than there used to be. There used to be lots and lots of grey boxes, which was a list of things to do. The black boxes mean that these things are now done. They're available as tools and resources for you to use. So they're just listed there under the different information management principles that they support. And I'm happy to talk through any more of those, you know, in the break or so forth if you want to know more. But basically, you can go to the ICT Strategy website and you can click through and access. Most of these are policies. There's also some standards, and we'll be working in the media to develop more standards. But not all of these things come from OFS. So some of these things, you can see there are links to record-keeping standards, which will go out to the State Records website. There's links to privacy management guidance, which goes out to IPC, and a range of others as well. So it's not all just things that come from OFS. It aims to be a portal where you can find these resources in one place, and then it'll take you to the right agency. So then the final pillar there from the ICT strategy is skills and innovation. So this is really ensuring that the public sector has the right mix of skills to deliver on all of these things. Some of the things that we're working towards are really looking more at the capabilities that enable digital transition. So looking at what are the capabilities we need, what do we have, and how can we build it up. And that is to some extent building up the capabilities within ourselves and within the public sector, but it's also looking at how we can work more with other sectors to leverage the capabilities that exist elsewhere. Like what we do with apps in New South Wales, where government doesn't need to be a developer of apps. You know, we don't need to necessarily know how to exploit data in that extent. But we can leverage the capabilities that exist already in the private sector and have those apps developed if we just make the data available. And the other is we've been working with the Public Service Commission and the SOFIA group, who manage the skills for the information age framework. And the PSC adopted that framework to support ICT capability in the public sector, and along with support from State Records and IPC, we're working to get the information management capabilities with a bit more depth added to those so that they more readily reflect the different types of skills that are needed in this space. Now, I'm conscious about the time because I talked all about the ICT strategy, and the last part I want to talk about is the Digital Plus, the Accelerating Digital Government Task Force. Jenny, what would you like me to do? How are people tracking? Because it's coming on for a lot morning tea. And
what do you reckon,
5 minutes? All right. And then we'll add 5 minutes for questions or we run out for coffee.
You won't get coffee. Everybody will.
Okay, good deal. Seems fair. All right, well, there's lots of background on this slide here, and I made the slides available as well, so you can read it at your leisure. But a lot of you will remember that last year there was a legislative and policy review into the framework for records and information management in the digital environment. It had a really long and complicated title. And there was a steering committee that came together to manage that, came from State Records, the Information and Privacy Commission, Ministry of Health, and also from Justice. And they were looking at the existing framework across the State Records Act, GIPA, PIPA, HRIPA, the Information Security Policy. So there were five key areas. And just because, one of the catch cries that especially ministers often hear when they say we want to be more digital and why is government so far behind everyone else in moving to new technology and new ways of working, is they hear this story that I'd really like to, but unfortunately the law won't allow it. And so the minister said, is that really true? Because if that's the case, then the whole rest of the world is going digital. We need to sort something out. If the law is a problem. So the group got together and we looked at all of these different laws. We looked at a lot of different things. We also looked at what was happening in our sectors, and we came back with an answer that probably most of you find unsurprising, which is that the law doesn't prevent these things. The law doesn't say that we all have to work in paper. Broadly speaking, the law is open to records, information, data in all different kinds of formats. But what we did find is that the framework is complex. It wasn't really designed for the digital environment. So sometimes working through answers in a digital environment is difficult. That there's a lot of perception. People make these claims that, the State Records Act says I can't store data outside the state and therefore I won't, or that everything needs to be in paper if it's got a wet signature, blah, blah, blah. People make a lot of claims that there are perceptions about how the law works and that the word records means paper. And so these are bigger challenges than the actual law itself. And that the other thing that's a big challenge in moving to digital is more so the technological issues of legacy systems and the information management challenges where we don't have standards in place. So what we've said is that, there are indeed a few things that could be tweaked in the policy and in the legislation to make it a bit more consistent and easier to navigate. But there are some bigger issues around culture and a broader sort of reform to really help government move into the digital environment that go beyond the law and go beyond, and are outside the scope of the policies and such. So the recommendations that came out of there were some work around policies and legislation, and so we are all dutifully working away on those. But then the ICT board said, well, we want you to go away and do some more work then on how we can accelerate digital government. What are the things we really need to do? And that's where the task force then came into play. And what their goal was to develop a roadmap to accelerate that transition to digital government. They had representatives from all these different departments that are listed on the screen. They were at the deputy secretary level. So a lot of very senior buy-in and interest in this process. And they looked across a range of themes to look at this change. They looked at community engagement, how we communicate with the public and other sectors about government things, how we transform our services in the digital environment, how we use and share data and information more effectively, digital workplace. I think that's a really, really critical piece that is so often overlooked because it's boring. But, if we don't have the tools to do our job, we can't be digital. If we're still working in Lotus Notes, we just can't be digital. We just can't do our job without the right technology. If we're on Windows 98 and the rest of the world is in 2014, we can't be digital. So digital workplace is a really, really important thing that, is always overlooked. It's not as big a deal as changing the law, but it's really important at the bottom level. And then there's a cultural shift, which is helping all of us perhaps become less reliant on paper and understand how we can do things a bit differently. And I think that if we have a lot of the right tools in place that actually make it easier to work digitally, then the culture shift will follow. But these are the things that the task force looked at. The approach they took, they commissioned some research through consultants who looked at the characteristics of high-performing digital governments in other places. They looked at some scenarios and case studies from New South Wales and internationally about digital projects that are actually happening. So two interesting ones in New South Wales. There's the Jura portal from the Justice Department, which enables a sort of end-to-end digital and mobile-friendly process for jurors being empaneled, being called for jury service. And I speak from personal experience as a person who was called for jury service when the paper process was still in place and had to get excused because I was working on this. And then my next call up came through the portal process. So I stood across both processes and I can tell you it is fantastic. It's beautifully designed, it has the customer at the centre, it's absolutely seamless, it's really friendly and helpful. It's a great model. So the Jura portal is a really good one. And the other one is the use of Patchwork. It's mostly being used in FACT, but it can connect up caseworkers around a client. So if those caseworkers come from FACT, they might come from health, education, and police, you know, any different agencies, but who are dealing with the same client, it can help to connect them up around, you know, and help alert them perhaps to any issues and make connections across the different areas that that customer might be interacting with government. So that was also another really good one. We also had three workshops where we brought together people from across government, industry, non-government organisations. I know at least a few people here came to some of those workshops, and we just sourced lots of ideas about what was working, what people need, what have they seen elsewhere. And then finally, we had some engagement with the community. We had what we called a fusion room, which had about 85 or so members of the community across all different demographics in a really interactive half-day workshop where they talked about what their appetite was for digital, what are the sort of services they would like to see connected up, you know, what kind of data would they like to see made available, what kind of apps would they develop. And that was fascinating, and especially to see really that the community, they want digital government too. You know, they're clamouring for it out there. Of course, they recognise that privacy and security are really important things to manage, but they don't see them as barriers to digital government. They just see them as things that we have to figure out, right? They can do their banking online, they can do their shopping online. You know, why can't they put in an application or, you know, renew a permit online? So a lot of support from the community through that workshop and also a survey where we got about 1,800 responses from, you know, from across New South Wales about people's views. Now, all the terms of reference, updates and reports into these different things, lots of them are already available on this link that's on the slide, and then a couple more, including the roadmap itself, will become available as we go through. So please go and have a look there. Roadmap itself is being considered by the ICT board today, probably now. So, you know, and depending on their recommendations, it may go to Cabinet after that. So that's sort of where it's at the process. Now, I've got a few words there about what is digital government, and it may seem a bit backwards for me to talk about this now rather than when we first said accelerating digital government. But the thing is, we really had to talk to all those different people and do that research and understand what's happening in the space to really understand exactly what digital government is, because it's just a bit of a concept and it's words, but what does it mean? And there are two key aspects to what digital government is. One, blindingly obvious, it's about using technology, right? So there's a key link to things like the ICT strategy. We can use technology to do all the things we do now, but do them better and faster, do them more or more accurately, or spread them more widely. There are lots of great things we can do with technology. We can put our data out there online, and our services can go online. And we can also use that data and technology to support in-person services. So you don't have to just put everything online. You can be the person on the phone or the person over the counter who then has access to the right information at the right time. You can be a person providing in-home care or a remote on-site service somewhere else with a tablet and a secure connection to good quality data to do your job better. So there's a technology aspect to it, that's one thing. But the other thing, especially for government, is about understanding what is the role of government in the digital ecosystem. It's like I said, out there, the whole world has changed. It's all gone digital and everything happens in a different way. People have different expectations of services. There are all kinds of different business models springing up that we never had to regulate before. You know, so what is our role in government in supporting and participating in that ecosystem? That's the other aspect. You know, what are our services? How can we make better use of data? How can we put that data out there? And what do we need to do to participate in that ecosystem? That's the other sort of trickier part. So the roadmap itself, it's not another strategy at all. What it does is it says there's all these existing strategies and reforms that are going on, and this is just a way of tying them together. All these different things are working towards digital government in some way, but they're currently sort of competing and they're not all joined up. So the roadmap tries to draw them together and say things like the ICT strategy, the Customer Now strategy, the Public Sector Capability Framework, the New South Wales Economic Development Framework, for example. All of these have different pieces in them that need to be tied together to really move us forward in the right direction, rather than working separately and in silos. The roadmap then outlines just critical success factors to do that and some of the actions required to achieve the change. And then what does that mean for us? Well, these are just some ideas that I had that I want to share with you, and then we can talk maybe later about what your ideas are. But I think that really for us, one of the biggest things is this growing interest and support from senior leadership. You know, we've been crying about it for so long and saying we really need these people to understand what it is that we do and why this stuff is so important. And they're finally starting to get it. They're really starting to understand the value of data and information. And that's a blessing and a curse, you know, because so we get some interest and we get some resources, but then we get expectations, we get deliverables, you know. So we have to be aware that that's coming down the road, and that there will be a bigger driver for a digital by default sort of approach. But I think records and information managers have a big role in supporting change across the organisation because of the things that we know and understand, particularly what we understand about processes and the way that data and information flow through the organisation, and how it could be connected up from one part of the organisation to another to make a bigger, clearer, more interesting picture. I think we have a lot to contribute in that space. And also thinking about customers, you know, in looking at information being open by default, but then addressing privacy and sensitivity issues to draw out the exceptions. I think we have a lot to contribute in that space. So that was everything from me.